Hey guys, what's up and welcome back to yet another episode of the Breakthrough Podcast. Today I'm very excited because I've actually got, my recent discoveries, recently discovered this artist. He goes by the name Shishi. We have Ashish Paliwal all the way from New York on the Breakthrough Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, my friend. How's it going?
What's up, Rohan? Good to see you. Good to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's going well.
You know, I always say on any, anytime I introduce my guests, I'm like, I'm really excited. But, I'm genuinely really excited today because, like I mentioned before we, hit the record button, I recently discovered your music. I think probably it was one of the Instagram reels that came across. So, I think it was the, Silsilaye Chahat Ka reel, the one you played at Mexico. I think that just popped onto my feed. I was like, what is this track? Who's this guy? I was like, oh, shit. And then I was like, I was so hooked onto your music. That's what I'm saying. I'm really, really excited to, to dig down and know what's going on in that, that amazing brain of yours, because I've literally been hooked on to all your music for the last, I think, about 3-4 months now. So again, thanks a lot, man, for coming on the podcast. It's great to have you all the way from New York. Thank you and welcome to the podcast once again, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. That means a lot. It really warms my heart to hear you speak about the music like that. And happy to be here. Thanks for, I know we're have a pretty big time difference. So thanks for accommodating my New York time.
that's the least I could do, man. That's the least literally I could do. But first of all, Ashish, before we get into your into the podcast, I just want to kind of understand. You've born and raised in America. You've traveled the world. You've been raised in different continents and different countries. If you could just give us a brief idea about where were you born, what were you doing, how did you get into this whole scenario, and how do you land up in New York?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born in Columbus, Ohio, which is about like the whitest place and you could think of in America. It's like just very American. I mean, literally, it's called Columbus. So I was born there. I was born there in 1990, and I spent the first 4 years of my life there. And then just due to the nature of my dad's work, he was working for an international company, and we moved to China when I was 4 to Beijing. Okay. And so I grew up in China for 4 years, and then our family moved to Switzerland for like a year and a half. same company. It was just my dad was just getting moved around. And then from Switzerland, we moved back to the States when I was around 10, and we settled in Connecticut, which is right next to New York. So basically, like when people ask me where I grow up, I don't really have like a simple answer, but I essentially grew up in the States like after the age of 10, but those formative years from like 4 to 10, I was in China and Switzerland.
Wow. If you could also give us a bit of a background about your family. I know your mom's into music as well. If you could tell us what she's doing, what she's currently doing right now, because that's really, really exciting. And I think that kind of plants the seed of what you're doing right now in your career. So if you could just tell us about what your mom does and what your family does.
Yeah, totally. My dad, works in business. He was running an audio company that makes like speakers and headphones and things like that. So that was a nice little serendipitous thing. I got a lot of free stuff, which was good. but my mom is very musically talented. She's just very artistically talented in general. And she is a classical Indian singer. She's a classically trained Indian singer. So, before I was born, she was performing around the US, and also my parents were living in Singapore before I was born. And so she would perform these ragas, like with a full Indian ensemble, like a harmonium player. She would be on the tampura and singing. Sometimes there would be a tabla, sitar, that whole thing. And so I kind of grew up with that sort of marinating in my subconscious, if you will. Like I never really, it wasn't until much later when I started making my own music that I started appreciating that kind of music more. I always just kind of, it was just like something that my mom did, right? Like, but I didn't really like put two and two together. Now fast forward, 20 something years. And now when I started producing my own music and really diving into my Indian heritage, I think a lot of those early years of just like my mom just in the house, like singing just to herself, and that just seeping into my head. I think that definitely has been influenced my style a lot. So,
wow. The reason I wanted you on the podcast is because since you've been traveling all across the world and you've been raised in different continents, the music that you have is very different. I mean, of course, there's a lot of Indian touches, a lot of Indian influence in your music. And I'm actually hooked to, like I said, I've already been hooked to a couple of your tracks because you're using a lot of Bollywood samples. And the thing about these kind of tracks is that there's a very, very thin line, you know, if you're doing Indian ethnic vocals and stuff like that, it kind of gets, it's in a very, very, gray area where if you do it too much, it gets, you know, it becomes Bollywood. And if you do it too, I mean, you know, I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. But, you know, what you're doing is exactly the perfect match. You know, it's not too much and it's not too little. It's a perfect match. So how did this whole idea about doing, you know, something in the entire Indian, because you've obviously not, you're not born here. You literally have, I think, very little memory of, the Indian sounds and, what's going on in India.
Right.
Why did you take that decision to kind of, get in touch with your Indian roots? Although, it's a very scary space, a very scary, literally a very cliched space to be in. So, how did that come about?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. You're totally right that it's a fine line. I definitely agree with that. And I definitely didn't go into it like consciously being like, well, I'm Indian. So, if I make Indian music and then it'll be this marketable like package that labels will like and stuff. I mean, I had those thoughts came into my head after I started making music, but I think it really just, it's hard to describe, but it kind of going back to what I was saying earlier with like hearing my mom, early in the house. And I just think it also has to do with the fact that like, I just am Indian. Like, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but there's like something in my blood that is just sort of attracted to certain types of melodies, certain types of scales. I also grew up playing the guitar and I learned, I was really obsessed with guitar and I was like learning solos by, Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin and like Guns N' Roses, like Slash solos from Guns N' Roses. And like a lot of these scales that these solos were made out of, they were constructed out of modes, like different, Lydian mode or Mixolydian mode. And a lot of those modes are actually really influenced by Hindustani, like Indian classical music. Mm-hmm. So a lot of Western music is very, actually very, very derivative of Indian music and Eastern music. I didn't necessarily consciously put that together at the time, but looking back now that you asked the question, I think I was just always drawn to those sounds. Because melodically, for the reasons that I just said, and then also because I think just in general, and this is like a cliche, I'm sure like every artist would say this about themselves, but like I definitely feel like I've never really like fit in to like anything, like socially, like in school, because I was always moving around, so I never was in one place enough to be like part of the cool kids. And then even like musically, my ear is just always attracted to things that are like weird and different and foreign and ethnic. And so when I started getting into electronic music at the time, like Avicii was really big and Skrillex was really big. And like they were using all these sounds, but I was just like, this would be dope if I could just incorporate like a touch, just like a touch of Indian elements, or not even Indian, just Eastern or anything. Like my music also, I mean, like I use like baile funk samples from Brazil and like dance hall stuff and Latin stuff. And so for me, I think that was just like taking my life, which has been such an amalgamation of different cultures, like going to school in China. I was always at international schools. So like, I remember in China, like my best friend was from Spain and my other friend was like from Singapore. And like, I think basically my music is kind of a musical representation of that sort of upbringing.
Yeah, because I remember, I think the first track I heard of yours, I think it was Sajni, okay? And then I think later Sajni 2.0 came out and I was like, dude, this is a proper banger. I think that by far is one of my favorite tracks. And then I obviously collected a couple of tracks on my Spotify playlist and then I was on to do my stuff. And then another track played in a bit of an R&B-ish kind of a track. And I was like, this is cool. Who's the artist? I was like, dude, it's the same artist. And that's something which I really, really appreciate because I've been sharing your music. Every DJ, at core, I'm a DJ and I like that feeling when I'm playing a track that people don't know. And there's a bit of a surprise in it. I purposely do that in my sets. And, you know, I used to, anytime you always, you know, come at home or whatever, there's a house party, I used to always play your music and just surprise them. And then I was like, dude, it's about time people know about this music because this is phenomenal. You mentioned in terms of the genres that you choose, you've got, let me count, you've got like a deep house kind of a track. You've got it's a track called Aarti, which is a bhajan, basically, if you would say.
Yep.
You've got a couple of Spanish tracks and, I mean, reggaeton. I mean, there's so much happening. Don't you think is it a bit risky in terms of an artist when you're making any kind of music? It gets too much because I think you dropped an album about 2 years ago and about 12, 13 tracks in the album, and they were so... Each track was so different from each other, which I really appreciate as another artist myself. I think you also had a meditation track in the middle as well. So where are you going with this? I mean, in terms of, I mean, it's a real honest question from an artist because you can go, I mean, it is kind of an end road because your listeners are going to get really confused. You might have few listeners who are going to be like me, who like love everything. But what exactly was the thought process when you came out with that album?
Dude, I have no idea, man. Like, I don't know what's happening ever. Like, I mean, that's like a deeper answer to the question. It's just like, I feel like there's something moving through me and I'm just like, you know, my job is just to open my channel enough for whatever needs to come through for however long I'm on this planet. And that's kind of like my whole life mission. But to bring it back to Earth, like, I think with that first album, honestly, man, at the time, I was not really sure of my artistic identity. And I mean, I don't think I'll ever be like fully sure, but just by comparison now, I feel a lot more clear about what my sound is, where I'm trying to go. But at the time, you know, I was really just like, I was just trying to get heard. Like, that was my main motivation. Like, I obviously wanted to make good music and stuff, but like, everything I did was like, how can I maximize my streams on Spotify? And also, how can I show my versatility as a producer and basically just like flex, like, oh, I can do all these different genres. Like, look at this, and keep that Indian theme in the middle. But to your point, looking back, like when I look at that album, to me, it feels more like a compilation album than like a cohesive body of work, because that's what it was basically. Like that album, I think 6 out of the 12 songs had already come out. And then 6 of them were new, but it was me wanting to put out an album. Also just because like I was about to turn 30 and I was like, I really like don't want to turn 30 without having an album under my belt. So yeah, that's the honest answer. Like, I didn't really know. And I know, to your point, that it probably did confuse a lot of people because I think this is probably something good for like other artists to hear. Like one thing that I look back is like that album came out and I got a lot of streams. I got a lot of love on Spotify. I was like, and getting put on so many different playlists. Like one song was like on an African playlist. Like it was dope. Like it was amazing. They really supported it. But I'm not sure how many like real, true, authentic Shishi fans came out of that album. I think it produced fans for certain songs, like Aarti, yeah. For example, like a ton of people love Aarti, but like I'm sure a lot of them like probably haven't heard any of my other stuff because it's just like so much more popular than a lot of the other stuff. So to your point, yeah, like I didn't really know. And I think like the way that I'm making music now is much more focused and honed in. And I'm still producing all kinds of stuff. And you know, like I'm down to work on anything. And I think like especially in this day and age, people's attention spans are so short that like it's not like back in the day where like you created one album every like 3 years and it was like this like magnus opus, you know, like it's just people don't have the attention span now. So for me, it's just like, if I feel inspired by something, if it moves me, like I just trust that, okay, that in some way that's like my style, you know, I don't need to necessarily fully understand how, but that's kind of my mentality.
Sure. So going forward, what's your plan in terms of music? Like you mentioned, you know, you've grown over the years and you've kind of understood what your sound is. What exactly would be your sound right now? And from a marketing perspective, what's the direction you're going towards as a producer?
Yeah, totally. So I would say the direction I'm going towards now is I spent 6 months in Tulum, Mexico over the pandemic, and I was DJing there. I had a residency at a club there. And I got really into this like underground deep house, tribal house, Afro house, organic kind of sound. And that really influenced my sound. And I would say like, you know, the first album was almost like more pop. If I were to put it into a category, it was like,
yeah,
it was dance, but like everything was like the structure and arrangement of the songs was very like predictable. It was like verse, hook, drop, chorus, whatever. And now the music that I'm making now is kind of a cross between that style and this more underground deep house organic style. I really do feel like the stuff that I'm making, I haven't really heard anybody making it. And that's the first time that I can really say that about my music. Like even the stuff earlier, I was always kind of like basically like ripping off like Major Lazer or like some other like person. But this time, like I'm really like creating from a place of authenticity like I've never really had before. So I'm really excited to put it out. And in terms of the plan, right now I'm just kind of in a creative like bubble. I'm not really worrying too much about releasing. I mean, I'm putting stuff out here and there, like Sajani came out a little while ago. But I'm taking this year to just create a big stockpile of music. And then next year, I just want to be putting out stuff like every couple weeks, basically for the whole year, and just give people a lot of stuff.
Wow. So how long have you been producing music? I mean, what's the journey been? What's the time duration been?
I started producing music when I was actually started relatively late. I started when I was 23. So I actually like downloaded Reason, I think, in college, and it was so intimidating and like not intuitive for me. Like, I don't know if you've ever messed around with Reason, but like just compared to Ableton, for me, it was like super not intuitive. So I downloaded it, and like for half an hour I tried, and then I gave up, and then I like didn't try to produce music for like 3 years. I was like, this is not for me. But then, yeah, I started producing on Ableton in 2013. And I took a class, like an Ableton class, just to understand how to use the software. So yeah, I guess it's been about 8 years almost.
Wow. So in 8 years, I think you've got like tons of support. If you just go through the people who've supported your music, the list is pretty, pretty huge and wide. I mean, in terms of the duration, it's just been 8 years that you've been producing. What's the response like? I mean, so for us, I mean, we obviously are Indian. We obviously love a bit of Bollywood, no matter how underground we are. We love that sense of, you know, Bollywood. We all have that, you could say, the Kida in us.
Right.
But what's the reaction for the foreigners? I mean, for the foreigners in the sense, the localites out there. What's the reaction? Because I'm pretty sure the Indian, the Indian audience out there would definitely dig it. But what's the reaction for those guys? I mean, when you're playing those samples which have authentic Bollywood vocals?
Yeah, that's, man, I love that question. It's in many ways, like, that's kind of one of my goals as an artist, is to educate white people about our culture, like through music. Because to answer your question, the reaction typically is really good because, I hope I don't get canceled for saying this. I mean, I don't think this is controversial. This is just my opinion. So like, I'm not forcing it on anyone else, but I do feel like, Westerners, we'll just call them, there's almost like a fetishization of Eastern things that goes on here in the States and in the West in general. And you see this with the most clear example of this is yoga. Like, just everybody fucking loves yoga. And it's like comes from India. And same with meditation and same with spirituality and Buddhism and like all these things that are like in vogue now. And I'm also a very spiritual person. I do a lot of spiritual practice. And like, so I see that in that world too. And I think in the same way, like ethnic sounds, especially Eastern sounds, people really love them. I think one, culturally, because of that fetishization aspect. And then two, at a deeper level, I really do believe that, like I was alluding to earlier, there's something about Indian music and the roots of Indian classical music that is very spiritually healing. And the reason I believe that is because if you actually go back and look at the way that Indian classical music developed in convergence with meditation practices and yogic practices like breath work and all these different things, pranayama, all this stuff, there's a clear correlation. And actually, like, one of my buddies, Ben Parag, he's the guy who sang on Sujani.
Sujani, yeah.
I was talking to him. We were in the studio last week and I was talking to him and he was saying that he's been studying Indian classical music for 17 years. And he was saying that his guru will tell him that when you make certain sounds at certain parts of your body as part of the training for the singing, it actually has an effect on your nervous system. So wow. I think that there is, you know, maybe people aren't conscious of it, but I do think there's like a subconscious draw to a lot of these sounds because they're they were developed almost in a healing context.
Oh wow! But I love the fact that you mentioned so openly with the whole cliche, the whole yoga and stuff. Talking about yoga, I think you are very, very active in the whole meditation space. And that's something which I definitely struggled with. So I really want to understand, you know, what's your sense on yoga, on meditation, and how does that help you as an artist? How is it helping you as an artist? You know, probably, you know, thinking, and you do a lot of philosophy. I see a lot of your quotes and stuff with that as well. So how has that helped you as an artist?
Oh man, meditation has completely changed my life, and it's probably the most important skill that I've ever learned, because. And I think specifically as an artist, I think as a human being, it's just incredible. But especially as an artist in this day and age, this social media day and age, where there's so much emphasis on marketing yourself, and it can so easily tip over into this sort of like narcissistic area where you're like constantly checking to see how many people like your post or who's watching your story or whatever it is, or even just like how many people are streaming your songs or comparing yourself to other people. And so what meditation does, the real deeper function of it, of course, like it helps you relax and there's all these, you know, like practical reasons you should do it. But at the deeper level, it's helping you see through the illusion that there is a solid me here that needs anything at all, you know, because when you really sit down and meditate and give yourself that space to just really watch your thoughts and watch your emotions and watch your sensations, you start to realize that just everything is constantly changing, including your sense of who you are, you know? And like you could test this by remembering a memory in a bad mood. And then later on, when you're in a good mood, remember the same memory and see how different the memory feels. It almost feels like a different memory. It almost feels like you were a different person. And so that's just an example, but the way that helps me with art and music is because anytime my ego is getting too involved, and this happens in the studio all the time, which as I'm sure you've experienced as an artist yourself, like you're in the studio, right? And you're making something and you're like, you start having second thoughts about like, oh, is this going to bump in the club? Or like, is this going to work on Spotify? Or like, oh no, mm-hmm. That's not me. Like, that's not my sound. All these thoughts, I'm not saying they're not helpful. Like it's fine to have those thoughts, but oftentimes in my experience, they're getting in the way of what is trying to come through you. And if you could just not pay attention to those thoughts, which is like literally what meditation trains you to do, is to just watch your thoughts with equanimity rather than getting attached to them, you would be able to keep a more open, clear space in your creative process, so that whatever is authentically coming through you can come through. And I mean, like, that's why we're artists, right? Because we feel like at some level that there's something inside of us that only we can bring out. So yeah, man, meditation has been super, super helpful for me.
Wow. Another personal question on similar lines, I think, is more of a personal question for me. I think you're one of the only people, I mean, I've come across who's done and tried ayahuasca. So if you could just tell us about that experience, if you don't mind, because that's something which I've only heard about and only, you know, thought about, you know, one day, someday. But you're the only person I've actually come across who's actually done it. So if you could just tell us quickly about what that is, what's the experience like, and what do you recommend it for us?
Oh man, it could be like a whole like three-part podcast series.
Yeah.
but I'll be quick with it. So, I mean, I'll try to be quick with it. It's a difficult thing to describe. First of all, I would say I think whatever benefit that somebody can get from ayahuasca or any plant medicine can also be achieved in other ways. So I do not think that it's something that everybody needs to do. It's a very personal decision. I think like if you feel personally called to trying it, then I would encourage it, but I would never say that like everybody needs to do ayahuasca. So for me, and it's very different for everybody, but I guess my best description of it is that it will take you and put you face to face with all of the skeletons in your closet that have either been hiding out, like unbeknownst to you, like below your awareness, or that you have been choosing not to look at because you know that it's going to be scary and uncomfortable. So ayahuasca will just put you face to face with all of those personal shadows, you know, and that can be very challenging. It can be very confrontational. I know for me, I did 4 ceremonies and a couple of them were like hands down the most difficult nights of my life. But on the other side of that, it can be very healing, because if you can actually just, you know, face those things and go through them, then you can integrate them and then you can learn a lot of lessons. So I learned a lot, but I would also say, like, it's not a magic pill. It's not something that's just going to fix, like, heal you or fix you. I think it shows you where healing is needed. And then after your ceremony, when you go return to your normal life, it's kind of your responsibility to follow through on that healing if you choose to.
And how long does the effect last? So how long does the whole self-realization last? I'm pretty sure that there are some after effects that happen. What is your personal experience? What happened after you consumed it?
It's the ayahuasca is funny because it's not like other drugs or plants or substances, in that most things you can kind of predictably just say, like, you know, if 10 people get high, they're all going to probably have like a similar experience. Like if 10 people smoke weed. But like with ayahuasca, it's very different from person to person and even from ceremony to ceremony. So I did 4 ceremonies and each one was incredibly different from the others. But I can take the first one and say, you know, it can take a long time to hit. Like I took the first time I did it, I drank the cup and nothing happened for about an hour. And I was just lying on my mattress for an hour. And there's the place that I did it, everybody has a mattress and everybody has a bucket next to the mattress because a lot of people puke when they do ayahuasca. Yeah. I actually never threw up in 4 ceremonies, which is like kind of crazy, but which I was told was pretty rare. But you oftentimes, like, either like you can have a very difficult experience where you're physically like throwing up or like shitting yourself or puking or whatever. You can have a very ecstatic experience where you're just like laughing or crying, like tears of joy. You can yawn, like literally I was like yawning for hours. And the shaman told me that that's a form of purging. He's like, if you're not throwing up, as long as you're yawning, you're fine. And I was like, the whole time I was just like, oh. So, the reason I know I'm kind of like tiptoeing around your question because it's so hard to describe.
I understand. I understand.
But I would say like common themes that people experience is death. Like I experienced my own death. I physically felt like I was dying, and it's like kind of like an ego death, teaching you to let go. That's a very common thing that people experience. It's actually called the vine of death. That's like what ayahuasca means. But it's very personal for everyone.
Wow. Now coming back to music, so what's your vision? What's your plan? Because these are a couple of my personal questions that I want to ask you.
Let me ask those things
because I'm never going to get a chance. Anyways, coming back to the music, like I said, in terms of music, is India as a market something that has come across into your mind? Because a lot of artists born and raised in India are doing, you know, Indian influence kind of music, and they're like blowing up. So there's Nuclear, there's Ruthers, I'm not sure if you know about most of these guys.
Yeah.
There's Nuclear, there's Ruthers. I think even Kashmir is kind of going the same route, you know. Have you thought about, entering specifically the Indian market? Because the numbers are huge. The audience, the listeners are crazy. Has that come across? I mean, of course, I know you're catering towards your market back at home. But is there any particular plan, any thought process, to target the Indian market specifically?
Yeah, 100%, man. Actually, before COVID started at the end of 2019, I put out my album. And then at the beginning of 2020, I was planning on coming to India for a tour at the end of 2020 and trying to tie it in and try to get a spot at Sunburn and like all those festivals that happen at the end of the year. There's another one called Magnetic Fields that looks really dope, and I really, really wanted to play that. So I was like ready to do that, and I was talking to I was talking to agents and promoters and venues and stuff. And then obviously COVID happened, and that kind of threw a wrench in that. And then I wanted to do it this year. So I am, to answer your question, that totally is on the in my plans. I mean, like, my Spotify numbers are like insanely skewed towards India. Like, I think my top 10 cities are all in India. And then my actual city that I live in, New York, is like 11 or 12, which is insane. So like, there's definitely an appetite to tour there. And a demand, I think. And I get a lot of DMs as well from people in India saying like that I should come to, you know, Chennai or Mumbai or Delhi or whatever, whichever city they're in. So I definitely would love to do that. I think it's just right now it's a matter of like watching the news basically and just like seeing when, you know, things calm down and it's possible to come out there.
Yeah, because I think India would definitely appreciate your music in terms of what you're doing. And there's a huge underground population that's coming in, you know, who want to listen to new music, who want to kind of, you know, have a good merge of Indian music and, you know, a lot of the stuff that we listen to. I think it's a perfect match. We're almost down to the end of the podcast, Shishi. Just wanted to ask you, what would be your tips? What would be your suggestions to all the listeners, all the producers, actually, because most of the producers would definitely go up and, you know, get some inspiration from you. So anything that you want to share?
Yeah, totally. I think that the biggest thing I would say for the producers listening, and actually just anybody listening, is such a cliche, but it's so true. Like, you really got to take the time and space if you can. And I know it's, everybody has different life situations, but try to create the space for yourself to really listen to what is wanting to come out of you and really just honor that, whether it's, you know, whether you're a musician or whatever it is. Like, you know, if you're a musician, like, really try to figure out what it is that's unique in you that's wanting to come out, and then just stay strong with that. And, you know, like, there's going to be so many opportunities to deviate from that. And especially in the industry, like, there's a million people telling you, especially when you get a little success, like telling you what to do or that you should try this or that, and listen to all those people. Like, I'm not saying, you know, be stubborn, but just always keep that inner voice clear so that you can remember what it is that you want to do. Because ultimately, I think myself and most people get into this because we love it, right? Like, we get into it because it's something that we love to do. And of course, we want to make money and have all the external success and everything like that. But I truly do believe, and it's been the case for me, that every time that I've followed my excitement, whether it's musically or whatever, the external stuff comes. It just comes to me. It's just like a law of the universe. And every time that I don't follow my excitement and try to get something out there, it just moves further away. So my advice would just be to really take that space to figure out what it is that's trying to come through you and just honor that.
Phenomenal. So Shishi, we have close to about 70, 80 countries that listen to our podcast. We've got a strong base of listeners who are authentic music listeners from India, from Pune, from my city. If you want to give them one particular link or one particular track that you want them, I know it's very difficult for you to choose which is your favorite work, but one track that you're definitely very, very proud of, no matter how old it is, that you would want, if you could just give them one song suggestion that, you know, if you want to listen to Shishi, check this track out and then probably discover me later. Because we genuinely believe that, you know, when we get artists to the podcast, when you get DJs and producers to the podcast, we want our audience to kind of go, and it's a very beautiful thing to go and discover an artist and, you know, kind of, you know, understand the artist more. So, an honest question, what song would you send them towards, or what work would you send them towards, which you feel you're probably the most proudest of?
Yeah, that is a tough question. let me think about that for a second. Okay, I'm gonna say a track called Mowgli, Mowgli. I just think that track is fire. Like, that's like one of the few tracks I've put out that like I still listen to, just like recreationally. And I also think it's a good indicator of the direction that I'm going in for the future. So
you heard it, guys. Mowgli, check it out. Also, before we let you go, we're going to do a bit of your podcast promotion, because you've got a new podcast coming up. If you could just tell us about that. And I think probably my listeners would probably come onto your podcast, and it'd be great to kind of tell us what the podcast is and what do you do. And, you know, then we can probably sign off.
Yeah, for sure. We'll cross-pollinate. I would love to have you on as a guest too. So my podcast is called The Sacred Giggle, and it's hosted by me. So, but if you just type in The Sacred Giggle, you'll find it. And essentially it's just, I mean, if you guys follow me on Instagram for like at least a week, you'll see that I just like think about a lot of deep stuff and I'm very, very spiritual. And so the topic, the sort of theme of the podcast is I'm bringing on artists and creative people that are just doing cool things or that I find inspiring and talking to them about the deeper reasons why they do things and, you know, what makes them them at a deeper level. So, yeah, the first episode's out. It's with a really talented singer named Anson, and there's a lot more to come. So definitely check it out.
Great. Thank you, Shishi, for coming on the podcast, on the Breakthrough Podcast. Before we go, we just want all our listeners to kind of just go back, stalk him, check him out on Instagram. His Instagram handle is Shishi Music. Check out his music on SoundCloud. Check out his music on Spotify. For me personally, I would recommend you to go check out Sajni 2.0. You will definitely love it. Check out the track called Aarti. There's a track called what? Shanti. I love Shanti as well. So check out all his music and thank me later. But for now, Ashish Paliwal, you've been great. Thank you so much for coming on the Breakthrough Podcast. It's been an awesome, awesome time talking to you. And I hope to see you soon on the podcast. And whenever you're next in India, I would definitely be on the dance floor. Or probably we could just do a back-to-back set as long as we're together. It'll be fun. Cheers, man. This is awesome fun. Thanks a lot, Ashish. Cheers.
Thank you so much for having me, man. Really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, guys.
Cheers, bro. And that was the episode, guys. Thanks for tuning into the Breakthrough Podcast. I'm getting mad love from all of you guys from the fraternity. Continue sharing, but definitely consider subscribing, following, liking, doing all that good stuff. This definitely helps me a lot.